What is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 117. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that helps us out a little bit and helps the podcast keep on going. With me today, as pretty much every day we record, is Derek. What's up, Derek?
What's up?
Nothing, man. It's Monday. We're a little day late here.
Yeah, busy weekend.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, and we had to do a podcast this week because there's some really interesting stuff that happened this week, I would say, in the tech scene.
Definitely.
So if you've been following some things, it's a pretty big deal, I would say. But we'll get into that in just a little bit. We'll start out with our reviews this week. And we have four really cool products this week. So first, we'll start out with the Aorus Z370 Ultra Gaming. And this is pretty much the Gigabyte or Aorus, kind of one of their more entry, not entry level, but it's kind of the entry level to their, you know, the Aorus gaming brand when it comes to their Z370 motherboard. So this board pretty much like ticks all the boxes when it comes to a Z370 board. You know, you have support for multiple graphics cards, you have M.2 support, you have USB 3.1, and of course it wouldn't be an Aorus motherboard without a ton of RGB lighting, which you also get on this board as well. They've changed the color design slightly, but mostly it's an all-black PCB, and then of course the RGB LEDs will do all the talking. But one thing I really liked is there's this kind of like huge Aorus logo on the board itself, which I think looks pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah, the PCB looks really good on this board for sure.
Yeah,
and actually it's fairly clean and it looks pretty good that way.
Yeah, I actually liked it. The only thing I really didn't like about this board is like there are two M.2 slots, but there's no cooling built into them. We've saw that on a couple other Z370 boards that the cooling's kind of built in. This, you don't have it. You have to kind of go up to like there's a Gaming 7, I believe, that has it. I don't think the Gaming 9 is even out yet.
I mean, you pay for what you get at this point.
Yeah. And this board, I forget how much this board is. It's not that expensive. It comes right in that kind of, you know, not entry level, but it is a you know, right at that price point where you get it into like a, you know, a good MSI board or a good Asus board, like right in that price point.
Right.
You know, but like I said, it has all the features that you would want. I think when it comes down to all these motherboards, you know, going from Z270 to Z370, there's not really a whole lot, just for the fact that there's no new technologies that are being utilized that could go into this. You know what I mean? The Z370 basically was because we needed better power for the Intel processor, the HN processor.
Right.
So if, you know, every time I do these reviews of these Z370 boards, I'm kind of like, it's kind of like the same thing we saw in the previous generation, because there's not a whole lot motherboard manufacturers can really do or add that kind of changes it from the previous gen that came out almost, you know, less than a year ago.
Yeah, it's just hasn't been enough time for new tech to take over.
Yeah, so that's...
not really been any advancements.
Yeah, so that's the only thing there. But this is a really great board, and, you know, being in its price range, I would say that, you know, I was actually surprised the amount of RGB lighting on this board. I mean, I know that's kind of like a thing now, but still, you know, the memory slots light up, the two main PCI Express slots light up, the Aorus logo on the PCH lights up as well, and then you have the there's a kind of like an LED strip along the end of the board too. I mean, there's quite a lot of stuff that lights up on this board. So if you're looking for something that you can really, you know, the thing that Aorus has done is like all these different board manufacturers use, you know, different colors for different things, and Aorus is like, we're just going to keep it primarily black, and then the RGB LEDs will really kind of, you know, you can change them depending on whatever type of build you're doing, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, just use the lighting to change the look of the board. It's kind of the best scenario that you can go with, really. Just give it a nice base, clean base to start with, and then let the lights do the talking.
Yeah, totally.
The one odd thing that I was kind of thinking when I was looking at it is that the shield on the IO, the IO shield, because it doesn't have any of the other larger shields that we see on the higher end Auris boards. It's kind of clunky up on the left hand side a little bit.
Yeah,
it kind of stands out in contrast because there's no other heat, like the other heat sinks are a lot smaller.
It just doesn't kind of go down into the audio components and everything.
Yeah, it doesn't balance quite the same, but other than that, it's a good looking board.
Yeah, in its price range and everything, it has all the features that you're going to want. And for those, again, looking to kind of customize with RGB LEDs, you could do that. And it has headers on the board, too, so you can match, you know, the lighting inside your case with this as well. And the Gigabyte's RGB software is one of the best out there. I really like it. It works really well. So definitely go ahead and check out that review if you're interested in that board. And that brings us to a case from a company that I never heard of, which is weird because, we review a lot of cases, and I would say that...
more than what we just reviewed, more is just that we're in tech, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of feel like you've seen everything.
And it's not often you find a new company that sprouts up, especially in the case. You know, I remember when NZXT did it. I remember when Fantex did it. I remember when Fractal Design did it. Those are the three that really come to mind in the past, I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are kind of like household names now.
Well, they certainly are. Household and beyond. But they all kind of like were, like they kind of popped right up, and a lot of the people behind them had been around, you know?
True, with other brands. Very true. So this company is called Mean It, which is an odd name.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, but this is their 5PM case, and their whole thing is they make cases with tempered glass. That's a thing this year.
Yeah.
And the big thing that's different about this case is compared to a couple other ones that I checked out is that one, the front, the both side panels in the front are tempered glass. There's no plastic. Like on that Cooler Master case, the front was plastic. This is full tempered glass. Secondly, the tempered glass is 5 millimeters thick. Typically, you see 3 or 4, so this is thicker, heavier tempered glass. Those are two things it has with it. Now, this case comes with blue LED fans, so they're not RGB. I would expect this company to come out with an RGB version because that would just make sense.
Yeah.
But they offer this with 4 included fans, all of which are blue LED. You can get blue LED, red LED, and 2 different fan versions as well. So there's one that kind of looks a little different than this. So you get to pick kind of what you want. But I think, you know, for like a first case from a company coming out, this is actually a really nice case. It works really well. It's designed really well. It's designed to be functional. That's something when cases come out, I remember when Fractal Design came out, their cases were really well done. Because they took a lot of time, but a lot of companies will kind of rush a case out and it's not super functional. But this case is actually pretty functional. It has everything that you would expect it to have. You know, everything, at least in my case, was pretty easy to install. Now, the one thing that I felt was a little weird is that there's a pump bracket that is installed. Pre-installed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something you typically find. And again, if you take that out, which I don't think, at least most people won't be buying that, won't be using that. A lot of builders are, you know, doing the AIO thing, and you know, but that could take some cost off, and you could, you know, just like
Fantex does that. I think you can go either way with it, to be honest.
Yeah, that's one thing I thought was kind of weird. And then secondly, they have this sort of cable organizer that kind of hides your cables. It's cool and everything, but it's made of plastic, which I didn't like. Take out the pump bracket and take out this thing and add in a LED strip. Doesn't even have to be RGB. It could just be blue to match this. Because the thing about this tempered glass case and many other tempered glass cases is that the windows are tinted. And if you don't have any lighting in your case, you're literally not going to see anything.
Yeah.
So I think that instead of those two things, having a light strip would have been a nice, you know, nice addition to this case.
Mentioned the CPU cutout is too small. That's kind of
that was the other thing. So that was the big thing too, is that at least for my motherboard, which is a standard size board, the CPU cutout was a little too small. So I installed my motherboard. I went to go ahead and install my AIO, which of course uses a backplate, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do it, and it was rather upsetting because you know you're going through this install process.
Oh yeah,
you've already put in the you've already put in your motherboard, and you know a lot of times people install their AIO last.
You probably should.
Yeah. I mean, as most people, you should. So you go through this entire process, and then you're like, I have to take the board out and put in the, put the backplate on and all that. So that was kind of annoying.
And then they include the pump bracket, which means they want to set it up for water cooling, but then they don't have a cutout that's big enough for you to mess around with different blocks and stuff. Seems kind of like a huge short sight.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I found an issue with this board. One other thing I did like is they do include a fan hub, which is nice. A lot of these ones that come with fan, with all these new RGB fans, they don't actually have a fan hub. This mm-hmm. does, yeah. Which is another thing that I did like too. But yeah, that's like one big oversight. And I think that's a huge oversight because, I don't know many people that are using a stock cooler these days, especially us enthusiasts. Every CPU cooler, at least almost all of them, use a backplate.
Yeah, they require some sort of pass-through system.
Yeah.
It's a very, very odd thing to miss. And honestly, at this point in time, your cutout should be plenty large enough. That's like an issue that we used to look for like 6 or 7 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Was we actually checked cases? If you hadn't pointed it out, I wouldn't have even noticed because I would have just assumed that they had made it big enough because they've just started making them, pretty much massive at this point because there's no reason not to make it large, right?
Exactly.
There's nothing you're losing by making it bigger.
So that was the one thing. And it, like I said, it is a huge oversight, especially for a case coming out in 2017.
Yeah. I think, too, that launching without RGB fans, as you mentioned, is probably a bigger deal than you would think on the surface. Because this is a brand new company, you have to come out and the product has to nail it, right? It has to hit everything in order to take the sales away from somebody else who's already doing all those things.
Yes.
Like why would I risk buying this case from this brand new company or even just newer company, Why should I, when I know this other company like Fantex or NZXT is doing it like well already, why would I risk it? You have to have all of those things. And I think that's something that we saw those companies do when they came out was they checked every box and then they added some. And this is close, but I don't think that it quite matches up.
Yes, I do agree. I think that it's a good first effort, but to become the Fantex or to become the NZXT, I mean, their first cases were like completely thought out.
They were killer.
Yeah, so I think that, that CPU cutout is just a big deal. RGB fans. I mean, this case has been out for a little bit. I did some research. I mean, it has been out for a little bit. It's not like it just came out. If it had just came out, like say it was released last week when we did the review.
Yeah.
When
did it come out though?
Like over the summer, I believe.
That's still RGB's been around since last summer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I just think
that you don't come out with a mediocre case, right? There are a ton of entry-level case companies, and even beyond that, every company makes cases that kind of cut the corners, right? And they're missing just a few things to keep the price down. You just can't do that when you're just getting started.
That's very true. I 100% agree with that. So
it might not be a bad case, right? It might not be, but at this point in time, it's basically got to be a home run.
Yeah, I think what about this case is making me choose it over an NZXT, a Corsair? You know what I mean? Why should you? Yeah. So it has some things going for it, but the things that are missing and the obvious, especially, like I said, the RGB fan is a big deal. I mean, they only have red or blue, which obviously doesn't match everyone's build. And the fact that, again, the CPU cutout is missing, and it's,
Odd things to miss on.
Yeah, especially CPU cutout. That's kind of like a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's silly.
So check out the review. Like I said, it is a good case. I do like it. you can't argue with tempered glass. It just looks good.
And we're probably being a little harsh, but like you make it or break it, you know, like with your first case, essentially. I mean, you can come back, but you really want to, like, if you want to start on a strong note, you got to hit all those points. And they kind of didn't.
Yeah. Seems like. I agree. I 100% agree with you. Like I said, check out the review if you are interested. Like I said, it is a good first kind of run, but again, if they want to get to that point of NCXT, Fantex, Corsair, all of that, it kind of had to be, you know, they kind of had to knock it out of the park, and they just really didn't.
Yeah.
So that brings us to our next review, which is the Rocket Cross, which we talked about a little bit last week because we said it was coming up this week. And this is sort of Rocket's, you know, one thing has become very popular, and I know there's two camps. There's the huge, massive headphone camp, which I have on right now, which are like this huge Corsair headset that I have. And then there's the smaller, super light kind of thing. And this is what these are. These are smaller, light, made to be portable, made to even possibly use for, you know, mobile gaming or something like that. You know, I don't know where you fall, Derek, on this, as far as, you know, what kind of headset that you like.
I would say most of the time the bigger headset.
Yeah, I go for the bigger headset too. But there's definitely a lot of times where I don't want that big headset, and especially like if I am playing a game for an extended period of time, there's not many headsets that I can take off my head and I don't feel some type of fatigue, I would say, or like sweating inside of your ears. That's like never good. You know, so this headset is, like I said, it's smaller, it's lighter, simple, you know, stereo headset from Rocket. Pretty good sound. It's $69, so it doesn't necessarily break the bank when a lot of the bigger headsets are well over $100.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, you know, it's a pretty good headset. One thing that was weird about it is that it doesn't have that lay flat design though that we see on a lot of headsets, which is weird.
Yeah.
You know, especially for one that's supposed to be used with mobile, it doesn't have that, which is a little odd. But besides that, I think it's a good headset. Again, not overly expensive at $69. You know what I mean?
Is it worth $69? Because I mean, there are plenty of really cheap light ones, right? So what sets this one above and apart from, like, your cheap?
I think one is that it does have the microphone attachment. So not a lot of like mobile-esque, I would say, headsets have that.
Okay.
You know, so, and it does have two different cables. So like, I know, I don't know about you, but like if I'm walking around listening to music, I don't want a microphone on my headset. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this comes with like a cable made for mobile, a cable made for your PC or, you know, type of gaming where you need voice communication.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one big thing that I see with this. It does have the 50 millimeter drivers, which, you know, sounded pretty good. You know, like I said, it's hard to differentiate because there's a lot of cheap headsets and it all comes down to the sound. You know what I mean? A lot of times, a lot of cheap headsets sound like real tinny, like they have that kind of tinny sound.
Yeah.
Or they're overly bass heavy, which is never good. Either they're just,
yeah,
so
they try
much
to compensate,
bass,
but they really don't create bass well either. Anyways.
Yeah. So Ryan's want to review this, and he said it sounded good. It was, you know, good sound. You know, comfortable, good sound. Like I said, just didn't have that lay flat design. He said that the volume dial was just a little bit kind of small, which again can never be good, especially if you need to adjust the sound, you know, while you're in the game or something like that. You know, so, but like I said, it seems like a pretty good headset for, you know, right around $70. I mean, I think if you're an informed consumer, you can kind of do your research and see what you want. But for a lightweight gaming headset, it seems to be pretty good overall. So
nice.
So yeah, I think I need to get like a more portable, you know, headset, because I have this big ass Corsair one. I don't think I'm gonna walk. I don't think I'm gonna walk around with this.
Yeah, you're not gonna do that with the Kingston ones either, probably.
Yeah. No.
Or the HyperX, excuse me.
No, those are big as well. So. So yeah, so talking about portable things, our last review this week is a product that I absolutely love. Just all products like this I love. And this is the Samsung Portable SSD T5. And this is their follow-up to last year's SSD T3. And that's their portable USB 3.1 solid-state drive. And this one looks almost identical to last year's. They've just increased the speed. So they went from USB 3.1 Gen 1 to USB 3.1 Gen 2. And our testing, that's basically 100 megabytes a second faster than the previous generation, which can obviously make a difference, especially when it comes to encoding video and doing different transfers. Obviously, going to be a little bit faster. Slightly smaller than last year's, but literally almost the same size, same style, same design. This year, they use an all-metal casing, as opposed to the last year's was partial metal and had like a plastic.
I thought it was all metal last year.
It had like a plastic end cap on it. This one's all metal. You know, that's the big difference. You know, there's not a whole lot to talk about when it comes to these portable drives. They're just super fast, super tiny, and super easy to use, and that's what this drive really is. This does have you, when you should install the software, you get 256 bits AES encryption as well, so you can password protect your drive. You know, if you're on the go and somebody steals this, they won't be able to access your data. And this drive comes with both USB Type-C to Type-C and USB Type-C to Type-A. Like the A data drive we took a look at last week did not. Yeah, this one does.
Comes with the proper connections you need.
Yeah, so that just helps with backwards compatibility. While you may have a Type-C connection at home, if you take this to the office, there might not be one, you know, vice versa. So that kind of solves that problem as well. And Samsung is offering this in 250 all the way through 2 terabytes. So you're definitely...
got the right sizes as well.
Yeah, so you're definitely ready to go. And Samsung literally just emailed me today, and they'll be having Black Friday discounts on this. So if you're looking at picking this up, wait till Black Friday. So
there you go.
Be some discounts on it for sure. So that brings us to other stuff we did this week. And first... since it is the beginning of the month, or semi-beginning of the month, we have our 20 worst PC setups, and that's where we go out and find just some of the worst PC setups out there, just people who are, one, can't afford a desk, or don't have a desk, or moving, or people who are just downright slobs, which is, that's what we see a lot of times. So we have 20 of those PC setups. Some of them are just pretty bad, this one. I'm trying to figure out which one is the worst.
I think the descriptions are crucial to this because it makes it so much worse. I live in a two-bedroom apartment with 5 other people and 2 cats. We use this almost exclusively to play Binding of Isaac. It's horrible. And just imagining that scenario makes it so much more disgusting.
Yes. Oh, man. Some of these are bad.
Yeah. Don't know how people use this stuff.
This one, if you look at the first one on the second page, this guy made a he calls it a luxury ergonomic cardboard lap desk / mouse pad.
It's like a single cardboard box.
Yes, but he's like tape. He's like kind of made a little mouse pad out of cardboard as well. It's kind of funny.
Yeah,
it is kind of funny. Nice mouse though. It's the Corsair. I forget which one that is. I reviewed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cool stuff. Definitely check out these. These are always kind of humorous to see what people are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, that also brings us to Case Mod Friday, which, of course, is where we cover a build or mod that's been done in the community. And this week, we have a scratch build called Gear Fraction, and it's from Suchao Modding and Design. And we've featured a bunch of his builds, and he's really well known for his scratch builds. I believe he's the one who did that kind of a build that kind of looked like a gun. That was one of the most popular builds in the past. And this one is designed sort of like a gear mechanism that would be in a watch kind of thing. That's kind of like what it looks like mostly. And it's kind of fitting because this is inside the ASRock X290, or it's based on the ASRock X299 Tai Chi, and the Tai Chi, their whole thing is like the gear. That's what's actually on the motherboard is a gear.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so that's kind of fitting. And it looks like, I assume this is built for ASRock to be used at, say, CES coming up, I would think.
Might be a little early for that, but perhaps. Yeah, any sort of trade show.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It's really, really cool. I'm not sure. I couldn't find out. I went on his Facebook page. I'm not sure if the outside gears on this actually, like, move. That would be cool.
It looks like there's a chain back in there.
Yeah.
So I would think so.
Yeah, that would be really, really cool. But yeah, just like a really cool design, something different. We saw one that was like the full gear. I forget who did that one. We featured that one not that long ago.
Yeah, I think that one was a little better than this one. This is basically just like gears on the outside of the case. Like, it's essentially the gears are in the door.
Yes.
And then there's just a PC on the inside. I prefer to see them it is a design case like this. I prefer to see the components incorporated in some way into the, like, functionality of the design.
Correct. Yes.
So, well, this is really cool aesthetically. It's kind of just like a PC hidden inside a box.
Yeah.
With gears. So.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Is like, there's certain Scratch builds that are like, the build takes precedence over the parts, and then there's other ones that the parts are a very big part of the build.
Yeah.
I think this is one where the actual design of the case or whatever you want to call it is the more kind of thing. So,
yep.
But still very cool. Obviously fits the motif of the X299 Tai Chi quite well. So maybe we'll see this at CES. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's certainly one that they would probably still bring.
Yes.
I imagine they'll have a bunch more, though.
Yes, for sure. So that brings us to news this week, and we have some pretty big things. And the first one is that Intel and AMD teamed up to build a chip, which is odd.
Yeah.
The Intel versus AMD has been a thing for a long time. And this is actually the first product that they've worked together on since the 1980s, which is crazy. And basically what this is basically an Intel Kaby Lake chip with graphics cores that are from the Vega architecture, basically. You know, Intel's HD graphics have just never been good. You know, and
come on now.
It just makes sense for them to go out and work with somebody, you know, it was either AMD or NVIDIA, on this to provide something that was better. You know what I mean? If they can't do it in-house, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, certainly. It's smart of them, you know, like, quit trying. Quit wasting resources on it. Graphics are not your thing.
Yeah.
Team up with somebody who is also failing in graphics. I mean who's really good at what they do.
Yeah. So this is a Vega, basically a Vega GPU on a Kaby Lake fused together, and they said this won't compete with AMD's Ryzen notebook chips, which are going to be, you know, full Ryzen cores, and they'll work with discrete graphics. This is for like super small kind of
netbook.
I wouldn't say netbook, but close. I don't think netbook's a thing anymore. Is netbook a thing? I don't think it's a thing anymore.
More like an ultrabook then?
Yeah, ultrabook.
Okay.
Type thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I actually was going for ultrabook when I said netbook. But now that you mention it, I think netbooks are gone.
Yeah, because I think netbook kind of got... ultrabook... See, the thing I liked... The thing that sucked about netbooks is, like, everybody was making them because they were super small, right?
Yeah, they were probably really cheap to make.
Yeah, they were really cheap, and they had, like, this crappy Intel Atom thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and they were great for web browsing. That was basically it, right? But we can all do that on our phone now. So the thing that's great about ultrabook is that Intel set specifications for them, so they have to perform to a certain degree,
standard, okay.
Which is nice. So
they're more professional products. So yeah, this is probably more for that.
Yeah. So
these will probably be fantastic parts.
Yeah. So what's cool about this is there's already benchmarks that have been leaked, and we know a little bit more about these chips. These chips are going to be known as Kaby Lake G. Which G stands for graphics, I would assume. And it's going to be the Intel Core i7-8705G and the i7-8809G. Those are the two different parts currently.
Okay.
And, you know, we have in our post kind of like the kind of scores on different benchmarks. Now, looking at these benchmarks, they're about the be, you know, right around of like a GTX 1050 Ti or Radeon R9 285. And you're thinking, well, this isn't like amazing, but for an ultrabook to be able to game in 1080p, I think that's pretty good, right?
It's decent.
You know, with, I think this will fall in line with, the thing about ultrabooks too is they have to have a certain battery life. And I think that
that's what I'm concerned about with an AMD part in there.
I know, right? but you know, yeah, you think, oh, I can buy a thin and light laptop with a 1060. You can buy it with 10, all the way up to 1080, right? But what this is going to do is it's going to enable thin and light designs with graphics power that can play games at 1080p no problem, right? And hopefully, like you said, less power because it's all on one chip.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes or no, perhaps.
We'll have to see. I think if Intel partnered with AMD, they made sure that the power requirements were within reason, I would think.
Yeah, maybe that's something that Intel can actually help AMD on.
Yes.
Because they cannot seem to get the power consumption under control for their graphics parts.
Yeah. So I assume we'll see laptops and you know, ultrabooks based on these designs and other products, which we'll talk about here in a second, based on these designs at CES. I would assume so.
And how does this not compete with the new, with the Ryzen laptop parts, the Ryzen mobile parts?
I'm not sure, honestly, because like I read that and like in the press release it says these are not made to compete, but I'm like, wait a minute. Ryzen just announced their mobile chips that have Vega in it, so this makes no sense to me.
Like, explicitly with the purpose of targeting in the ultrabook market.
Yeah.
So
makes no sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it sounds like marketing almost to me, because it's not like either company has a part that when combined gives us like the future of mobile gaming, right? This isn't anything, it's not anything like next generation wise. Like, gaming at 1080p on a mobile device is not a big deal. It's, I guess if it's got fantastic battery life, that would be something, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening. The performance isn't like insane. It's, and I mean, the biggest thing that I would want to see anyways on like an ultrabook is probably like 4K performance anyways,
rather than
actual gaming, you know, like, yeah, with good battery life, like 4K photo editing would be, I would say that's more the ultrabook thing anyways, because very few people are buying an ultrabook to play games on it.
Correct.
That's just like a, can I also play games on my ultrabook is kind of really the question.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see what laptops come out with this and kind of where they're segmented, you know, are they going to be marketed towards gamers or what, you know, what's the deal with this?
I think the cooler part would actually probably be cooler to me would be a more powerful version that is more competitive with a discrete GPU. Since this has HBM memory on it, it should be plenty fast in that department. Let's see a fast one where battery life isn't and the form factor isn't such a big deal.
Yeah, but I think then once you get into that, you say, well, then what's the point of doing that?
When you can just put, get discrete.
Yeah, put a discrete in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's the thing. So, but it looks like the first product based on this chip will be a NUC.
Interesting.
Yeah, so. We have pictures of it, leaked pictures of the board design for this NUC. And if you don't know what that is, that's Intel's next level of computing. Basically, they're small, tiny little boxes that are full PCs, full working PCs. And this one will likely be the successor to Intel's Skull Canyon NUC, which was more or less sort of made for gamers, but not like, you know what I mean?
Still basically just a checkout computer.
Yeah, so that one was more targeted towards gamers, and I think that if you could provide something super small like the NUCs are, I mean they're tiny, that could give me 1080p gaming in a super small form factor, super small power draw, like that I could just carry almost in my pocket.
Yeah, like and legit gaming, like 1080, like solid 60 frames.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
I think that would be cool. So it'd be cool to see this in a NUC, and I think for that form factor, this makes a lot of sense. Because we've seen companies, I believe it's Gigabyte, maybe a couple other ones, that took NUC designs and then try to smash a GPU in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just made them too big, and it was just, you know.
Yeah, it's double the height. It's essentially just a layered PC.
Yeah, so this NUC has M.2 NVMe, DDR4, so DIMM slots in there. Looks like a ton of other connectivity as well. So I would think at CES we'll see the next NUC unveil
from
Intel, for sure. I would think, yeah. With this in it, which would be kind of cool. Or at least like this would be like the...
Yeah, this might even be out already by then.
Yeah, oh yeah, especially since this is like... This PCB looks done.
It looks very done, yeah.
Minus the heatsink that covers this CPU. I mean, it looks...
But yeah, I assume that's removed for the photo though.
Yes. Yeah, so pretty cool. I think it'd be a cool product. It would be interesting to check it out, actually.
Yeah.
So I would say the big news of the week, at least if you're an AMD fan or GPU fan or anything, is that Raja Koduri has left AMD.
Yes.
He was basically the head. He took over as the head of the Radeon Technologies Group. And this is when AMD really made a big deal about... He kind of came on board when AMD really made a big deal about user experience in drivers, and when they really, like, I remember we were doing articles on, like, it's been a year since AMD has updated their, you know, and when he came over, they were doing just like GeForce, like always constant updates to the drivers, and it was a really great thing, and a lot of people looked up to him because he was the one bringing these new AMD technologies to light, and
he really made a much more robust GPU software suite, and it worked, and it was updated, and it was continually making improvements. He definitely turned that aspect around and actually brought a lot of life into the GPU side for them, because it was really struggling in that department.
And I think he just gave a kind of a face to, like, the, you know,
yeah,
this is the guy. Just like the, what's this, you know, Lisa Su for AMD. She's every time there's a CPU launch, she's the one who's up on stage. Mm-hmm. What's the guy from NVIDIA? I forget his name. Mm-hmm. But the guy,
should
you
probably
know
that.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you know, whenever they do an announcement and he's the person on stage, you know, so when anything AMD that has come out in the past few years, Raja has been the one on stage announcing it and talking about it. And we talked about him. He went on sabbatical back in September, and we talked about how is he leaving? What's the deal? Like, it's not, that's not something that's...
It was pretty obvious that there was something more to it.
Yeah. And you know what's weird is that he had to be involved with the Intel project, right?
Yeah. Probably from the beginning.
Yeah, so he had to be involved with the Intel project. And after AMD officially said that he has left the company, literally a day later, Intel announces that Raja has joined Intel. which is I find that quite odd for a couple of reasons. One, you would think that there would be some type of no compete in his contract or whatever.
I'm sure there was. I'm absolutely sure there was. In fact, there's still probably things he's not allowed to disclose, but having, you know, obviously this was a business move on AMD's part to put their GPU into Intel's what are we calling that?
The NUC?
The part, the processor.
Oh, the Kaby Lake G?
Yeah, because they can't let NVIDIA get in there, right?
True, very true.
So I think this was a carefully crafted move on both their parts. So yeah, non-compete was probably just put aside for anything that he needed to use for this.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's just like, how do you go from working for, you know, basically, obviously they work together on a chip, but, like, you know, working for one major company in the exact, you know, in competing industry to working for their rival in the same competing...
Overnight.
Yeah. You know, so he's taking...
Yeah.
he's taking over as the senior vice president of the newly formed Core and Visual Computing Group, and the general manager of a new initiative to drive edge computing solutions. basically, he will expand Intel's position in integrated graphics for the PC market. You know, Sam has a weird theory about this, is that, you know, he, you know, they were obviously working with Intel on this chip, and maybe he just decided, oh, I like it over here better.
Well, okay, so probably what happened was, you know, he got to visit the Intel campus quite a few times, and, like, you know, they had better coffee drinks, and they had better pastries available, and the chairs were nicer, and he's like, wait a minute, what is all this money for R&D? Where are you getting all this R&D money? And
this is, yeah, Intel, I would say, has quite a lot more money to,
yeah, absolutely.
So that was kind of the big story this week, and it was just a big deal, and right now, Lisa Su is going to take over Raja's position, but she's just, it's interim. She's taking over until they find somebody to fill that spot. Who knows who's, I don't know who wants that job, to be honest, right now.
That's a horrible position to put yourself into.
Unless you're, you know, ready to change the world.
Like, I mean, you're starting over again, essentially. Like, Vega was just such a huge failure that it's, they're lying to themselves if they think that the GPU division is in good standing.
Yeah,
I mean, we were even joking that AMD was gonna, they were gonna sell it off, which, yeah, I think they still could do. I think they would be smart to sell off the old ATI, rebrand, yeah, ATI again, and sell it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we talked about that last week.
When he left, we were like, well, they're done.
Yeah, I mean, he was the kind of person keeping the Radeon Technologies group going.
Yeah.
You know, so it's whoever, you know, has to fill those shoes is going to be tough to fill for sure. I don't know who wants that job. I don't know.
I mean, I could take it, I guess. I'll probably just quit pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Join Intel, just like Raja.
I know, right? work for there for a couple of years and then just get that big pay increase to move over to Intel.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Can't blame him on that move at all.
Not at all. So, also talking about graphics cards, if you guys know, Derek's a huge Star Wars fan. And we talked about it last week that there's this collector's edition Titan X coming out. We didn't know what it was. There were some rumors that it would be like the first card to feature GDDR6. Mm-hmm. And NVIDIA just fooled us all, and they're just Star Wars-themed Titan XPs.
They're just cashing in.
Yes. And you know what's odd is I think this is the first time that we've seen a card from NVIDIA or AMD that's actually like a promo card. You know what I mean?
Like for anything?
Yeah, I don't remember like NVIDIA releasing like a themed card for anything. Or
I guess
AMD.
not NVIDIA or AMD directly, but
yeah,
like
third parties.
Yeah, third party. Yeah.
But for NVIDIA to I can't imagine how much that costs to license it.
A few bucks, I'm sure.
Yeah,
probably a few percentage points of sales.
Yeah. So these cards are pretty much the same as the original Titan XP, except for there's a silver edition and a black edition, one's for each side of the force, obviously.
Yeah.
They have pretty cool lighting on both of them, I would say, that's mm-hmm. not on the original. They look really cool. The back plate is a full black back plate that says Star Wars on it, which is very cool.
There's almost nothing about this card that isn't very cool.
Yeah, it's a super awesome card.
I assume that they're supposed to be lightsaber themed.
Yes. Yes.
Like lightsaber hilts.
Yes.
But they come pretty close, but it's obviously stretched out, so it doesn't quite hit that. But oh man, when you see the two pictures next to each other, I'm like, I want to see two of them, one of each in a themed build.
Yeah, there has to be. Somebody has to be doing that right now.
Yeah, like right now. Yeah. Think of all the stuff you can do. I mean, like, continue on with the lighting scheme and just, like, split it all up so, like, the different components are split throughout the case.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Without intermixing everything too strongly, oh, man, it could be so bad.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. These are $1,200.
This is a $200 increase?
Yes. Basically, you're paying $200 more for the different design.
Kind of seems like NVIDIA's getting their licensing fees back there, probably.
Yeah.
It is a really cool box, though.
Yeah, the product presentation boxes look awesome.
Yeah.
They look really, really cool. This is like one you just like don't even want to put in your system, I feel.
I bet a few of them just get bought and they never get used, yeah.
Yeah, super, super cool. So that was a collector's edition. I think that it looks they look pretty awesome, and if you know, being a Star Wars fan like you know Derek is, he just loves this.
Yeah, they're cool.
Now, which one would you want?
If I was only getting one, I would get the light side for sure.
Yeah, I like.
I'm not not a dark side guy.
Yeah, me neither. So.
Oh, one little thing. Oh no, that's probably supposed to be the activation button. There's a little like it almost looks like a G1 border plug on the top of both of them. Does it have water cooling?
No.
But no, that's just a button. Or a false button, should say.
Yeah.
Oh.
That would be cool, though.
Yeah.
So that'd be like a big surprise to integrate.
Ooh, do you think like EK does a water block?
Well, I mean, EK already makes a water block.
I know, but do they do a themed water block?
They'd have to get the licensing for it.
Well, you could do it without it being like explicit.
True. Very true. I don't think EK does that.
They might.
Because, like I said, they already make a block for the Titan XP, and this is the exact same PCB, so...
Yeah, and then just, like, take the color schemes and carry that on to... Like, it wouldn't be an acrylic top. It would be, like, a palm top with different coloring, or maybe, like, LEDs built into it, or ribbons or something, you know?
Yeah, that, like I said, that'd be... I don't think EK could get away with it without paying a licensing fee. I mean, I guess they could... But
I think you could do it. You just gotta. Carry
I think
on
with all. The... I think with all the hype around Star Wars. I mean, when's the movie come out?
December 17th.
December 17th. So, and like the game comes out in about a week, you know. Yeah. So, like with all this hype, it would be smart to even like, oh, we'll make 100.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
or like, yeah, because I mean, there can't even be that many of these Titans being made, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, oh, let's do a couple. You know, I think that would be cool. But yeah. You never know. We'll see. We'll see if we get a little press release coming from EK about that. But
yeah, we made green and red blocks for no reason.
Yeah, this have nothing to do with Star Wars. I don't even know what that is. I never saw it.
Oh, by the way, they're exclusively for the Titan.
Yeah. So anyways, we'll move on from hardware news to talk about something that's pretty interesting. You know, we've talked about cryptocurrency and mining and everything like that on the site. It's a huge thing this year. It's blown up this year. Bitcoin has increased 700% in value.
It's ruined the gaming industry just a bit.
Yeah, it's done a lot. And the next thing that's sort of breaking into is websites. And there's an article by Ars Technica about there's over 2,500 websites that are using what's called cryptojacking as a source of revenue. So basically, when you go to a website, there's a JavaScript-based cryptocurrency miner hidden in the webpage that basically uses your CPU to mine cryptocurrency.
So while the page is open, it hijacks your computer?
Huh. Yeah. And
interesting.
There's a huge debate over this.
Completely unethical?
Well, yeah. The big debate is... first of all, the big website that this is being used on is the Pirate Bay. They're using this for revenue, and I know.
Yeah.
Being the Pirate Bay, it's kind of hard to find advertisers, people that want to advertise on your website, or even using like a third party like AdSense, they can't. You can't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, nobody can get involved with you essentially.
Yeah.
Not that they don't want to, but.
Yeah. You know, so the big debate is this a way of revenue for websites in the future? If it's explicitly said, like, hey, you know, when you enter the website, would you like to run ads? Would you like to run the cryptocurrency? Like, you could pick or something, you know? Like, it's kind of a big debate. You know, and the thing that it's coming up now is that there's nothing built into Firefox or Chrome yet to block this, but like the AdBlock Plus browser extension, as well as McAfee and Kaspersky, they have their web software has set out to identify and block sites that use this. So I don't think it's going to get that far to where like we would.
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious bit of script. It's not super hidden, I imagine.
No,
it's right in the page's run code, right?
Yes. So yeah, it's interesting. I think that
you can, like, if you're given the option. I mean, if this is a page that you frequent and you're not, you know, I mean, you're not clicking on ads, you're not really contributing to them, but you're still utilizing it. I mean, maybe you do want to offer up your CPU time.
Yeah, but then that just makes the browsing experience worse.
Right, yeah, that's...
Yeah, so it's just a...
Is it crushing the pages? Is that one thing that's happening?
Like, I don't know.
Okay. I mean, it could be written where, like, it pauses when you're, you know, when you're clicking or loading something, where it doesn't actually, you know, cause everything to grind to a halt.
Yeah. So we'll have to see where this kind of movement is going. I mean, cryptocurrency is like revolutionizing everything, blockchain in general is right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this could be, you know, we could see this code injected in third-party ads that pop up, right? I mean, we've had issues on our site where there's code injected into the website to, like, for pop-ups, because we don't want any pop-ups.
Far
on
too
site.
Often, yeah.
Yeah, and we see it, like, once every couple months, there's
from,
one. And then
from legit advertisers.
Yeah, and then we have to report it, and then they go, you know, like... This could be something where, like, you go to think computers and your computer, like, just got 100% CPU usage, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's something definitely to look out for.
Which I better open Task Manager right now to double check.
No, we're not running...
Explain this to me, Bob.
We're not running the coin miner. you know, but that's just something that's coming up with this, and it's just like, you know, cryptocurrency is just everywhere. It's just, you know, that's the new thing. So
yeah, any way to do it. I mean, it's like it's kind of like free money out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah,
it's gold mining. So
as long as you can pay the electricity bill or it doesn't offset too far.
Yeah, those numbers are astonishing. Yes. The amount of the electrical cost of like any of all cryptocurrencies or any individual is pretty astonishing.
Oh yeah.
It's not very energy efficient.
for sure. So we'll talk about some games because we're getting to that time of year.
Okay.
Game time of year, I would say.
We like games.
Yeah. So first one is Watch Dogs. Oh, I think it ended today. It literally ends today because
we're gonna podcast on Monday. Oh shoot! Didn't get it.
Yeah, you didn't.
No.
we told you about this.
Yeah, I know. I have Watch Dogs 2, and I'm not a fan. So. Considering that this one got like a. Probably like a 20 Metascore.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, this is not a very highly rated game.
Yeah, so it ends. it ended today. So, well, anyways.
Yeah.
Ubisoft was giving away Watch Dogs for free this past week, which is a cool. You know, any free game, I think.
Free game is a free game. You're right.
Yeah, free game is free game. I added it to my library. I probably won't ever play it. I mean, I always you know, just like Steam sale time, I'll buy some games. I'll never play them.
Well, truthfully, for people like us, when it comes down to choosing what to play, I'm not going to play a bad game just because it's free.
Very true.
You know what I mean? I have a very limited amount of time I can devote to playing games. It's going to be something good.
Yeah. So that is that's yeah. We shouldn't even talk about it because it's over.
It's over. Yeah.
So also in game news is that EA has been acquiring studios and in some cases shutting them down. But they just acquired the developer of Titanfall, which was at least the first one. I really liked the first one.
I like the first one, yep.
Yeah. I didn't really get into Titanfall 2 that much.
People liked it, but it was very much the same.
Yes. But I really enjoyed Titanfall. The Respawn Entertainment, who's responsible for those two games, just got bought out by EA for $455 million. It looks like there was some type of bidding war going on with a South Korean publisher. And this raises a lot of questions as to what's going to happen to Titanfall. and if EA would turn the game into sort of what EA does, which is...
Wait, what is EA? What is it that?
You pay for DLC and everything else. You
pay for every little bit of the game.
Yeah.
You pay $60 for 25% of the game, and then you pay additional dollars for the rest of it as it is finished.
Yes. So that's the big thing. And, you know, a lot of people were worried. The other studio that they had bought in... subsequently shut down was working on a Star Wars game, and they halted everything for that. So a lot of people worried, well, that what does that mean for Titanfall? Is there gonna be there's not gonna be another Titanfall? We don't know yet.
They wouldn't necessarily buy a property just to shut it down.
Correct. So basically a lot of people are thinking that one, that EA is moving all their studios over to the Frostbite engine. That's what powers almost all their games. So it's likely that the next Titanfall game, whatever it may be, will probably use that. I would really hope they don't turn this into pay for everything model, but it just kind of seems like...
And Titanfall is like ripe for pay to play. Like,
yes.
Or not pay to play, excuse me. Which one is it?
For loot boxes, pay for heroes, pay for that's Titanfall is kind of like
the
made
name of the
for,
model.
Yeah, that's kind of made for that. Yeah, like pay to win.
Pay to win. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it's
so
great for it.
So we'll see. Like I said, I really enjoyed the first one. Didn't get into. I haven't played games that much. So I really didn't get the second one, but
no, I didn't play it either. Was, from the sounds of it, it was Titanfall 1 with wall running essentially.
Yes.
And the grappling hook.
Yes. So, in other big gaming news, two of the biggest games out right now are both PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds and Fortnite Battle Royale, and both games have passed 20 million players, which is insane, especially on the PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds side, because that game, you have to pay for it, whereas Fortnite is free.
Yeah.
The Battle Royale part of it is free. But 20 million players, that's awesome.
And it's great that the market is much larger than anyone thought, because there's enough players for them both to do this without killing each other. So this battle royale format clearly has a lot of play in it.
Yes. Do you think we'll see another battle royale style game from a big name?
Maybe. I mean, there are others. PlayerUnknown was not the first. They just happened to hit something that caused it to be so popular. I think that there's plenty in development right now. I believe.
I would think so. Just seeing the popularity and how it's kind of just gone insane.
Yeah, it's a lot of players.
Yes.
I really need to play the Fortnite version.
Yeah, I played Fortnite originally with Jack.
Yeah, I did
before,
too. Yeah. With you, actually.
Yeah, before it was the... before Battle Royale was added. And I did like it. I haven't had a chance to play.
The base building and other such.
Yeah, I like that. I like that whole aspect of it. So.
Yeah. Yes.
So, that moves us to... Well, I would say next week, but this week.
Yeah.
So, actually, it's on the site now. You guys can check it out. Is... I took a look at the Zotac GeForce GTX 1070 Ti, and it's their Amp edition. And we know Zotac, they make their normal card, they make their Amp, and they make their Amp Extreme. That's what they've been doing for the entire GeForce 10 series. And this is a nice card. It's a good... the Ti, for those who don't know, that sits right between the GTX 1070 and 1080, right there in a nice little sweet spot. Basically the same spot the AMD Radeon Vega 56 sat. Mm-hmm. And it still sits there. But this was basically Nvidia's way of kind of wiping that out. You know,
I assume
so,
this is just slightly faster than 56.
Well, I don't have 56 to test, so I couldn't tell. But yes. In all the tests that I've seen, it is faster, more power efficient. And the big thing, the big thing that I point out in my review is that there's actually custom cards available the 1070 Ti compared to, I think there's two available for, I don't actually, for the Vega 56, I don't know how many there are, because I know there's there's a, the Asus has the 64. I don't even know if they have a 56. Like, I don't think there's any custom 56 versions available at all. So you're stuck with reference, which is never good.
No.
Just for the fact that the biggest thing is like the cooling is horrible on, and it's loud. It's horrible and it's loud on reference cards. With this, you get their Ice Storm cooling solution from Zotac, which is really awesome. This is one of the best cooling solutions that I've used. My card was super, like 62 degrees under load, which is super impressive. Nice, yeah. Yeah, not that loud at all. You know, it's a good card. The only thing that sucks about all of these custom versions of these 1070 Ti's is that they don't come factory overclocked. That was the thing with this, and so NVIDIA didn't cannibalize their own 1080. All the 1070 Ti's do not ship with factory overclocks, so it's basically reference speeds. But what Zotac did is they said, well, here's a profile that you can download at your own thing, which will give you the speeds. So that even gives you even more performance if you would like to do that. You have to download their software and install the profile, but it's available.
Yeah.
That you can do. And their software is actually, the first time I've actually used their Firestorm software, works pretty good. You know, it just allows you to tweak, do all your overclocking. It has some monitoring in there. Allows you to change your fan speeds and all that, and also allows you to change the lighting of the Zotac logo on the side of the card to different RGB colors. So cool card, I like it.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, check out my review. We'll talk about it next week too a little bit, but since it's Monday and the review went up today,
might as well.
Yes. So also coming this week, we have the WD MyBook Duo 20 terabyte external hard drive, and this is basically a NAS, but not a NAS. This is Western Digital, or WD. This is their 2-drive rated external hard drive. So for those who don't want to get into a NAS, don't, you know, have a need for all of the things that a NAS has, this is basically a hard drive, external hard drive with redundancy. You know what I mean? So you have 2 WD red drives in there.
Without all the software that usually comes in a NAS.
Without all the software, without all that other stuff. But you can actually run software on the drive, which is pretty cool. You can set it. You can set like your social media photos and stuff to automatically back up to it. You can set like your Dropbox to back up to it. You can set, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's some software that you can do. Also comes with WD software, which is really good. USB 3.1. Type C into it, and then it comes with both cables. It comes with Type C to Type C, Type C to Type A, and cool. One thing I really like about it, it has a USB hub on it, which is not a big deal. But like, yeah, if you want to keep your area clean and you don't want like a ton of cables going to your computer, having the 2-port USB hub on the back that allows me to connect like that Samsung drive, I can just connect it to this rather than, you know, have to get up and connect it to my tower. It's much easier. So very cool. They offer it from 4 terabyte all the way to 20 terabyte, and they're all WD Reds, so you'll have great performance there. So
yeah, and long lasting.
Yes, very cool stuff.
Yeah, well, I figure we'll talk more about that next week as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, cool stuff. And then we're taking a look at we haven't taken a look at a review or a product from Arctic in a while, and we're taking a look at their Freezer 33 Esports Edition. It's their Freezer 33. They're just calling it an Esports Edition because it's I believe black. Painted black, and the you get a couple different color fan options. So if you're doing air cooling and you maybe want to match your build, this is what this does. But it's a simple tower cooler, dual fan, which is always good. Works with all the latest CPUs minus Threadripper, which like no CPU coolers, you know, unless they're made for it. So 220 millimeter cooling fans, single tower design, all that kind of stuff. So we'll have that for you as well. That's it for now. We might have one more review. It depends on if I get it done. But a lot of cool products in right now, so we'll have a lot of stuff coming the next couple of weeks. And at the end of the podcast, we talk about if we did any geek nerd kind of stuff this week, tech stuff. Did you do anything?
I'm not sure if I did. I mean, I think we talked about Stranger Things last week.
We did. I almost hit play the other night. I almost did, but I didn't. Because I don't want to be like you, and then I have to binge it, and then I don't get anything done.
Yeah. Would have been worth it, though. I actually don't think that I did. Oh, well, maybe. Found a, not a new podcast, but a new podcast to me. The Dollop. You ever heard of that one?
No.
It's a weekly history podcast, sort of. It's comedy, and these guys find these like pretty much insane people throughout history, and then like go through their whole life or this whole story of something that happens, mainly based on the in U.S. history. But it's just there. It's hilarious. It's oftentimes in front of a live audience, so there's a lot of interaction, and then they have guests and stuff. And I've really gotten. I've listened to maybe 6 or 7 of them, and I'm really into it.
How long are the episodes?
At least an hour. Some are 2.
Nice. I'll have to watch. I love history, so that's something I'm gonna have to check out.
Yeah, and it's sometimes it's guys that you're like, oh yeah, I do know that person, but a lot of times it's just this random, and then you're like, it's just this horrible human being, and they just make it so funny. It's
That's cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yes.
I'm trying to think if I did anything. Did I do it? Did I tell anybody? Did I do anything?
I don't think so.
I don't think. No.
Just work.
Just reviewing products and getting all that done.
Making videos.
Shot another video today, doing the audio for tomorrow. That's about it, I think. So just getting stuff done. A lot of cool videos coming, a lot of cool reviews coming. Got some pretty cool products in to review as well. So guys, that will end it here. As always, we have our full show notes page that has everything that we talked about, so you can go ahead and click through. And if you want to subscribe or anything like that, we have it on the page. But you can also just search Think Computers, all one word, in your favorite podcasting app or software or whatever it may be. So until next week, catch you guys later.